The Walk the Mile podcast is produced on Gadigal land. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which Skegg Stallinghurst stands, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to elders past and present. May our reconciliation be an ongoing process of love and compassion. Hello everyone, I'm Gary Lee Lindsay, school chaplain at Skegg Stallinghurst, and you're listening to Walk the Mile, a podcast that opens up conversations that we need to have. Hello everyone, and welcome to Walk the Mile. Thanks again for listening. Today, I think this is the first time we've had two parents on at the same time. we've had a few mums and a few dads, but never the two together. So this is another milestone for our podcast. Today we have Ross and Sunny Lusted. How are you both?
Very good, thank you.
Great to be here.
Good to have you here. And they have a young daughter called Bronte in year two, going into year three. In fact, by the time this comes out, she will be in year three. And she's having a good time, I guess.
She sure is. She loves it. Yeah, she's had such a great year.
Yeah, that's good.
So many wonderful things happening. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's good to have her here. Ross and Sunny, their background is, as I understand it, is in food and restaurants. Did you meet through that profession? Is that something?
I was appointed as the executive chef of Park Heights Sydney. And when I first started there, there was a whole lot of things I wanted to change. And they said, you can't do that until Sunny approves, and you can't do this until Sunny approves. And I'm like, who is this guy, Sunny? You know? And then and I was, you know, really pushing for the changes. And then Sunny entered the room, and I'm like, yeah, you can do whatever you want, basically. And so that was, when was that, 98? So we've worked together really since then.
You're right.
And there's a lot of people who always say to us, how do you, you know, be married to someone, have your day life, have your work life, and I don't know, we've done it for more than 20 years. And
We just had our 25th anniversary, actually.
Wow.
A couple of months ago. So yes, our work life has been completely entwined since that time.
Right. And were you working there too, Sam?
I was, yes. Yes, I was.
What was your role?
I was front office manager there.
Right.
Going back 25 years.
Right.
Yeah. So, that was quite a big journey. I was a hotelier actually for 25 years, in fact. So the first half of my career was in that part of the business, which was lovely.
So you both were working there for a while together, and then...
Yeah, and then I was... Sunny was transferred to Chicago to do a rollout, a reservations rollout for Hyatt, and I moved to Singapore. So we sort of had this long distance commuting. You know, it'd be nothing to say, oh, it's Thanksgiving weekend, I'll just come to Chicago for the weekend, and you know, flying crazy flights via Hong Kong and so forth. But and then we joined a company called Aman Resorts, and we moved to Bali, and we managed a hotel in Bali.
Wow.
And then and that was amazing, because, you know, I grew up in South Africa, Sunny grew up in predominantly Australia, but also, you know, lived on an island in Greece for a year and went to school in the US. So we'd sort of had this kind of vagabond life already, and
right.
So that really, Bali started our sort of 12-year overseas period.
Yeah, it was quite a sort of impactful time for us, actually. And certainly, I think from both of our perspectives, we were very, very grateful we had cut our teeth on working in different parts of Asia prior to living there. Ross had been based in Singapore permanently for a couple of years, and I'd been based in Chicago, but
mm-hmm.
actually... I was pretty much every week in a different city, so, you know, Seoul or Tokyo or
wow.
Taipei or Bangkok or wherever that might be. And what was super helpful, I think, during that time was this deep eye-opener about how layered each culture is and the sensibilities for that and the way to approach relationships and business relationships and coming in and, you know, we've got such a different mode here. We can be quite direct. Everyone's quite comfortable with, you know, having some niceties and saying hello, but pretty much getting straight into it. But you can't do that in a lot of cultures.
Yeah, sure.
And you've got to respect all of those different layers. So, you know, if you're trying to sort of restructure something, you know, you need to make sure that, you know, there's a mirror so that, you know, people can see behind the waterfront tree's been sort of being respected, or there's a money tree in the corner, because otherwise they won't believe that the revenue is going to be there if you're, you know, changing the way you're approaching, you know, the reservation system or things like that. So
yeah. I remember Sunny was given a big corner office in Singapore, and she's like, well, no, I can't be in there. It's the feng shui is not right. And it was really interesting because the feng shui master came in and he said, no, if you're there and, you know, you position yourself in this way. And and it's really interesting when you, like in Indonesia, we learned Bahasa. And if you just take it, you don't have to learn, you know, the whole language to read and write. If you can just say enough, and if you understand the cultural sensitivities, like in Singapore, to the importance of how, why feng shui is really important to their culture, I think it goes incredible.
I feel like we had huge learnings at that point, and I think obviously we wanted to be sensitive, but I'm going to say in anyone's journey you make mistakes and you go, oh gosh, I wish I could have handled that differently. I think having this benefit of learning on the go, let's say, very willingly, but not always doing everything as well as we might, you know, like you're really sort of growing and learning on your journey. I felt like we had a lot of layers and we really prepared ourselves. So when we were actually living and working in a remote community in Bali, you know, we were in a very, we were in East Bali, at that stage, several hours drive away from anywhere that was quite sort of heavily tourist based.
Right.
So it was really local and it was super important that we do things right. You know, we didn't want to put our foot in the wrong place, say the wrong thing, or be culturally insensitive accidentally. And I think we had this sort of heightened awareness about how to approach things, which was really, really wonderful at that time. So that was
Naturally impose Western ideas, Western culture.
Well, that's what I was wondering when we were both talking about it, because I was wondering how long did it take you to do that, because I know plenty of people might not be going up to start a resort or whatever, but go over with Western or white ideas into other cultures and falls apart. Because
you know, it was so interesting. There was, we were driving to Denpasar one day and it was bucketing down rain, and there's like 8 tourists waiting for a bus, like absolutely drenched, right next to a banana plantation. And there was a Balinese guy and he'd just taken a banana leaf and he stood there with a banana leaf over his head. It was like, that is the essence of us. You know, we think we're so educated, well-traveled, you know, within a different culture, you would find it hard to exist.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we complicate things, and there'd be all these sort of simple moments, practical moments. For example, you know, we were managing a beautiful resort in East Bali. You know, it was about 16 hectares of land. It was, you know, there was a lot of sort of things that had to be managed, and there was all this sort of beautiful white stone everywhere. And we were doing a walkthrough with the management team to prepare for the, you know, regular maintenance program that happened, and because there were all these beautiful trees, they would sometimes fall on the stone and then there would be little stained marks, and so we'd have to kind of high pressure clean them all of it. Anyway, so we were going through to identify what that was together, and so I was like, well, how are we going to kind of, you know, mark where the person's going to come in and do that? So I was thinking about having to go and find something. And in the meantime,
number 4 step on this walkway.
While I'm sort of complicating this whole process, like our housekeeping manager literally reaches up, plucks a leaf off a tree, and basically uses the, you know, the chlorophyll from that leaf to just make a little mark on the stone. Now that's going to wash off. It's not going to be permanent. It's just enough to let the person know, please attend to that.
Yeah.
And you didn't need all these contraptions or lists of everything or spreadsheets. You could just get on with it.
Yeah.
And sort of this for me was sort of an analogy for almost our entire experience living there.
Yeah.
Like every time we thought we knew something, we'd learn how to approach things in a different way and look at things in with another perspective.
Yeah, and no one can tell you those things, can they?
No,
before you
no.
Know.
Well, I'll tell you what, another really, and I learned this lesson, I'm glad, quite early in my career working. So I stopped cooking when we joined Aman Resort, so about 2000, and then I didn't really cook for about 10, 12 years. And so I worked in development. So we were working with the architects on master planning, and as a couple, we cover both parts of the hotel. So it was easy for them to, the company, to say, okay, do you want to go to Montenegro, or can you help us in Bhutan? I was going to Bhutan, and I designed a kitchen there, we'd built it, and the general manager said, there's a problem. The Bhutanese don't want to work in the kitchen. And I said, well, what's the problem? It's a traditional, you know, galley-style kitchen. It was a small resort. It's one of the first we did in Bhutan. And he said, well, they like to look at each other when they're working. They don't like to stand next to each other. And so I was talking to the chairman of the company, Adrian, and I said, oh, we've got a problem in Bhutan. I need to go there. I don't know why they can't work in the kitchen. And he said, did you ask them how they like to work before you design the kitchen? And I said, well, no, Adrian, it's a kitchen.
But
and
it is all this sort of stuff, isn't it?
And
yeah.
He looked at me and he said, you know, the Bhutanese culture is one of the oldest surviving non... They are separate from the rest of the world. They have.
I mean, it's been essentially a Shangri-La for a long time. You know, Adrian's like actually basically was... working with the king for I think about 30 years before it was agreed that an external company could come into Bhutan and do something because again building up that trust about was that community ready, what would be the impact on that community, and for that to be a positive way for people to experience Bhutan and for the Bhutanese to accept that. I mean, when we were living in Bali, we actually had some of the Bhutanese
team
living and working with us there for years to get them ready to sort of understand what it was that we were trying to do with those resorts and with, you know, deep cultural sensitivity. I mean, one of the things I think that was so beautiful that I'm so proud of about, you know, working with Aman Resorts through that part of our journey was that all of the resorts, you know, 99 if not 100% of all of the teams were actually from the local village.
Right.
And so
it
was there to support the community. So we were part of the community literally.
Yeah.
And, you know, people could come into any role and be supported and taught to learn skills if they didn't speak English, but that was important for the role. They would be taught English over the time. They would be promoted and get opportunities. And you know, we obviously lived and worked there and saw that happen, and subsequently have been back. We were back last year in Bali. We had, you know, the opportunity to take Bronte over, which was just incredible for their 30th anniversary. And, you know, and so most of the team are still there because they get to live and work in their own communities. But also their children have started working there,
that's
you know,
fantastic.
And their children are all best friends. And
some of them
it's
third
like,
generation.
Yeah, so
yeah.
This sort of incredible circle of life, I guess, that you're able to share in.
Mm.
And I think as a result too, because it's their resort and it's their community, then, you know, when our guests came to stay as well, instead of them having I guess a sort of sugar-coated experience, I suppose we could really then give them the key to the village, you know, have these really deeply authentic experiences and really show them how to you know, see the beauty. And, you know, the team used to sort of say to me, one of the most beautiful things about living and working there and working at the resort was that they actually realized from articulating, you know, about their religion, their culture, their philosophy, and talking about that, that made them realize even more so how important it was to them, but also how special it was for other people to understand that.
Yeah,
like, it actually
yeah.
heightened their whole experience, and it made them experience and appreciate their own culture, in fact.
We went
so,
on
yeah.
a cycling tour with
mm.
some of our management team, just as a group bonding thing. And we'd only been cycling 5 minutes, and I said, oh, stop, I want to... There was a blacksmith, and he was sharpening sickles on the side of the road.
Mm.
And for the Balinese, I went... You know, they drive past that every day. I said, this is so interesting. And then, you know, another 5 minutes is where they're making the bricks. And so I said, I've got to stop here. And they're just making bricks. And we actually lost a guest one day. Well, didn't lose him, but he was a New York developer, had built skyscrapers in Manhattan. And he went on a cycle tour. And I'm like, where is he? Should be back, you know. We need to send someone out to have a look. And they said, oh, no, they've got someone with him. They said, he's standing in mud making bricks. And he came back to the resort and he said, I've built multi-billion-dollar buildings. I've done all this stuff, but I've never seen
yeah.
how the bricks are made.
Yeah.
And he made his own brick and he took it back to New York and it sits on his desk. And that's what I think, you know, not only Amman resorts, but cultural travel.
Definitely.
And we've been very lucky. We've lived all over in multiple countries. And, you know, when you go to somewhere like Croatia or Montenegro, and we lived there for a while, you look back at your life and where you come from and what your heritage is and how multicultural Australia really, really is.
Mm.
And when you live in a monocultural society, you know, if you think, okay, I'm just going to go and have some noodles, or I want to go and have yum cha, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, one of the extraordinary things I think about Bhutan was, because it's been closed from the West for so long, we did a great... We built 5 hotels there, and the first lodge we started was 80% expatriates, 20% Bhutanese, and we built carpentry workshops, electrical workshops, but there's no benchmark.
Yeah.
So whatever you were training, like if you're making a croissant in the kitchen, you know, there's no one saying, oh, well, this croissant at
yeah,
this
right.
place is better than this. Never seen a croissant. It doesn't, you know, France doesn't exist. And, you know, so it's this incredible opportunity to see a country opening up to the West,
mm-hmm.
but how controlled they want that to be and what they want to bring in. They want to share their culture. But they don't want to go down a path of other parts of the world where it's just rampant tourism and
oh, sure.
and the culture is then lost.
Sure.
So
do you think when you're talking about multiculturalism here in Australia, and there are many cultures here, and as you say, it's quite easy to find a whole range of foods.
Yeah.
Do you think how well do you think we actually do that, apart from, you know, I can go and taste this food?
Mm.
Because I think there's still, well, from my experience, and people who I know from a whole range of cultures, they're just in Sydney,
yep.
still experiencing things like racism.
Mm.
Or
I think from living overseas, what I can say, and what, in fact, one of the catalysts for us returning to Australia when we did, was there's no doubt that there is so much improvement that needs to happen
mm-hmm.
in this country and in this city. There is no doubt. I mean, it is so far from perfect. And there's a lot of things that need to be addressed, without question. But there's also a very prevalent form of acceptance in general. I mean, you know, yes, you absolutely come across difficult situations.
Yeah.
And again, I don't see anything... that could contest that, but when you live in other countries and most of what you experience is actually divisive, is separation,
yeah.
Is racism, is us versus them, dog eat dog,
right.
You know, we lived in some parts of the US where you know, we were so excited because they were obviously at that time, well, not obviously at that time, but at that time, politically, they were trying to get Medicare expanded,
mm-hmm.
which we have the luxury of those benefits here, which keep our community, you know, relatively healthy in general. And there were huge situations going on, so many people dying. I mean, in the community that we lived in, again, in a rural community on the border of Arizona and Utah, we were the only employer that paid for medical. And people
right.
can't afford their own medical, and
yeah.
there was no Medicare. So, it, you know, if their child is sick, they don't take them to the doctor. They wait till they're on their deathbed,
yeah.
and then they get to the
emergency
yeah.
right? And, you know, again, the value system was, you know, I was so excited going, oh, this is going to change. Finally, these communities are going to have something different. And they're like, how dare someone impose
yeah.
their ways on us? We want the right to choose. We don't want to have Medicare because that's not a choice. I mean, there were all these things that were
yeah.
really, honestly, I was really struggling with because I do think fundamentally, in general, Australians do believe that the community needs to be looked after. And we're happy to pay higher taxes because that means that
yeah.
medical is for everybody, that
yeah.
everybody gets to go to school. You know, that there's a base level of living. And I know there's so many examples. I mean, you do such extraordinary work in the community, so you are so deeply aware, and certainly in our area as well, as we see there are so many people struggling and there are so many people that need help, and we need to continue to do even more than what we're doing. But the baseline in this country is actually extraordinarily high compared to many other developed nations. And when we were living overseas, we actually suddenly felt very proud of that.
Yeah.
And we felt that we wanted to be around people that shared that value system,
right.
that wanted things to be better, that recognized that this is not okay, this needs to be better.
Yeah.
And also to be excited about the fact that, in general, we are a very accepting, supportive community and a community-based group of people. It's not I just want to have what I can have and I don't care what's happening to the person next
yeah.
to me.
That
was quite monumentally a shock,
right.
Living in some developed nations.
Yes, right.
That wasn't happening
I think
in the rural areas in Asia where
yeah.
we were dealing with. That wasn't,
no.
but yeah.
You see, you know, places like Bali and Thailand and where we lived in Croatia, there's a village, and the village, no one... You know, they say you'll never see a crying baby in Bali because they never touch the ground until they're 1 year old. They always pass from person to person.
Yeah.
It's a cultural thing. But I remember when we lived in Dubrovnik, and it was quite early on after the war, and there was a lot of rebuilding. UNESCO came in and rebuilt the old town. But, you know, those people have been through a war. We, in this country, we have war and we have been through wars. But it's almost at arm's length,
yeah.
in a sense. Everyone is affected by it, but when it's actually they're literally dropping bombs on your
yeah.
house. And I remember a lady said to us, she goes, "Well, I lost my 30s," and she literally for 10 years of living through her 30s, they were at war.
Yeah.
And so, in terms of when you talk about, you know, racism, segregation, whatever. You know, you're in a country where they don't like their neighbours, but they're of the same ethnicity.
Yeah.
And they've lived together in
yeah.
peace for a long time, over the centuries.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting that there is no mental health facilities
oh, yeah.
there. There's, you know, there were no hospital,
yeah.
very limited medical care.
Yeah.
There was people really traumatised from that.
Yeah.
But the village... always okay. seems to be
exactly.
There
yeah.
and you know the men still all you know drink coffee and smoke cigarettes and you
yeah.
know and but it seems that they would solve their problems or they have people to talk to
yeah.
That's right.
And the women they sort of have their time but I remember when they at Christmas the kids of the sort of young teenagers, we were all told we need to be ready because they will come and sing Christmas carols. So they come around and sing Christmas carols, and you open the door and you go, no, 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 it's not good enough. You close the door and they have to sing again, and they sing like 10 songs, and then you finally let them in. And I mean, that's what I miss about living in those communities, and this real sense of community where, you know, you don't have supermarkets and, you know, have you pickled your vegetables because you need to have them under the house because winter's coming.
Yeah.
But then you are...
well, you know, one family, like a family of five, they would have five different olive oils because they've all gone and selected the olive oil that they...
To their palate.
I mean, there are all these sort of things that, you know, it's just quite lovely.
But what I think one of the most important things for me there was this real sense of community. We were so welcome there.
Yeah.
And I mean, God, the Sunny came back to Australia to see her parents, and Anushka said to me, where's Sunchitsa? And I said, oh, she's gone to Australia to see her parents. And I'm like, so who's cooking for you? And I said, Anushka, it's okay. I can cook. No, no, no. Come, come. So every day I'd have to go and have lunch because she's like, it's not that Sunny wasn't there.
Yeah.
No, it's not that I couldn't cook. It was because Sunny was there.
Yeah.
So they don't want you to be lonely.
Yeah.
So it's this amazing thing. And I think that's a little bit of what we lack in Australia.
Yeah.
And when we had this sort of, you know, everywhere we went, we felt so embraced. I mean, it was very, very special. And... you know, so back to Bali for a second. I mean, I think 2 or 3 months after we moved there, the Bali bomb happened.
Right.
So that was sort of an extraordinarily difficult situation for the whole community. Very sad for the families who lost their lives, and also for the whole community, because then, as well, people then didn't want to go there anymore. And...
well, they couldn't get travel insurance
so,
if you wanted to go.
Yeah, so the Balinese were firstly so distressed that something had happened there, and were deeply reflective about how and why that could have happened. They're deeply spiritual, so they were wondering, had they done something to bring that upon, you know, did they need to be reflective about how they were living or approaching life? So there were a lot of ceremonies...
to appease the gods.
For the communities, but also the everybody together in a broader collective way to, I guess, reflect.
Mm.
So there was a lot of reflection going on at that time. And separately, because the island pretty much lives from tourism, people weren't coming. There were travel bans going on. And so then a lot of the people that worked in hotels then didn't have jobs, so because a lot of the hotels either shut for periods of time. Our resort was quite boutique, so we were able to stay open and keep everybody employed. But even so, you know, a lot of their income was from service charge, which obviously was non-existent. So even though we were able to keep everyone on full salaries, that was still financially impactful. And seeing how the communities banded together... you know, if somebody couldn't afford to live, then they were invited to live in someone's home. You know, if they were struggling, then they would, you know, basically start planting fields again. The amount of collaboration that went on through that period was so inspiring and so moving. And I think to be part of that journey and to have had been instrumental in any way to support that, I think, is something that will stay with us our whole lives. I mean, we literally, I know people sort of have these special relationships with people that they've literally been to war, and we sort of feel, I think, like that with that community, where we just really all had to band together to get the whole community through it. Because often when someone's going through a difficult time, that person or a few people are having a difficult time, but there'll be some people that have the bandwidth to rally around and support. But when it's an entire community, then it's such a different situation.
Well, when we had COVID, we live in a street in Paddington, and we knew neighbours that you see. And when COVID happened, I said to Sunny, you know, there's people here, elderly people, who I know are on their own. So I said, so we did a letter drop up the whole street down and said, you know, put your email address and telephone number. If you want to, we'll collate it all. we'll distribute it to everyone involved, just so if you need something, so I'd send out a group text, I'm going to Bunnings, can you get me a bag of soil and some parsley seeds, I'm going to grow some parsley, great. So you do that. And then I started, we wanted fish because we eat quite a bit of fish, and so my fishmonger was delivering fish to me, and I said, and he wouldn't charge me the delivery fee. And I said, no, look, you know, everyone, because the restaurants were closed, you know, I need to pay the delivery fee. And he said, I'll tell you what you do. He said, maybe you get a couple of your neighbours who want fish, and then we can group the order. And so I said, great. So we started, I mean, at one point, we had like 25 families on the list. And we delivered fish, and it was like, so it's so interesting now. We did that all through lockdown and...
And then one of my
cheese suppliers said, hey, I love what you're doing. Can we support that? Can we? And so our little community of the 25 families, I think, and you know, my dad lived through his father going to the Second World War. And he said, we were talking about it one day, and he said, well, COVID is going to be your war.
Mm.
It's going to be, it affected the world.
Yeah.
Like a world war does, and you go through hardship, and people go through different levels of hardship, and you do come together. And I think what, you know, Sonny's saying about the Bali bomb, I really felt in our small community, people are so more open for a conversation. They've you know, and people keep saying to me, can you start doing the fish deliveries again? I said, I'm a bit busy, but it's really interesting. It takes one tiny thing for that whole street. Everyone knows everyone now. And it's still funny when someone says, oh, you're going to Bunnings? Yeah, great. Can you pick me up this? And there's this great community spirit that we have in our street.
Yeah.
And people who've moved in go, it's amazing. Everyone, you know, knows everyone. And we've got one of our neighbours has the tequila party on the, you know, a couple of days before Christmas. They've been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah.
So it's
fantastic. Yeah. It's the initiative, isn't it?
It is.
It's the initiative to take the opportunity. Because I think, you know, we've been talking about community, and people want it. People really want it. And both of you, you know, and I was just as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, we used to have these schools in Uganda that we built, and we'd take kids over there, and, you know, the community would hit them between the eyes and they'd sort of think, whoa, you know, all these stories that you're telling, same sort of stories. But providing that opportunity for people to not just to give, but to experience it as well.
Yeah.
When something sort of switches on, it's like, there's something here that I want, and something here that's good as well.
Yeah.
In terms of that then, like in terms of thinking about creating or providing that, coming back, the thing about the work that you do now, how do you incorporate, a while ago you were talking about ownership and how, you know, the resorts overseas and how you got the locals in and how they owned those businesses. In the stuff that you do here in Sydney, are you able to translate that in terms of your staff? And
most definitely. I mean, one of the most important things for us is, you know, having a shared value system, and, you know, for everyone to be really embraced, to feel like they're really part of what we're doing. When people come to work for us, we spend a lot of time talking about what the philosophy is of the restaurant, what we're doing from a food perspective, from a service perspective. You know, there's a really, everything is deeply considered, and there's a huge care factor, and certainly our philosophy is very much that if there's human connection and people feel cared for, that's the starting point of everything. Exactly. You can have beautiful food, you can be in a wonderful environment, but if somehow you feel the team is disconnected or they don't care, then everything's lost. That's actually the starting point for everything.
You know, in restaurants, you know, it's a people come, no one needs to go to a restaurant. It's part of one of our rituals of life, I think. And so everyone's going there to have a good time. No one's really going, let me see how I can make this the worst night of my life. But there's this idea when, oh, you know, you get the VIP list and, you know, give them a glass of champagne. It's like, no, you don't need to do that. You just need to recognize them when they arrive. you need to know that it's either their birthday or they really don't like champagne. And, you know, there's all those little things. So, you know, I think there's so much in our business that we've learned as hoteliers and in different cultures that it's not the most gratuitous thing that you can give someone to make them feel welcomed. It's just the tiny little bits. Like Sunny says to me, you know, obviously we have a very big business, and, you know, Sunny would say to me, your job is just to go in and sprinkle the fairy dust. And I always love it when she says that, because that's it. You know, you can just touch someone and say, hey, it's great, happy birthday. And they've it might be their first time at the restaurant. That doesn't mean they're a VIP. They're just, it's their birthday, and it's not difficult to say or recognise something that might make their day a little bit better in the experience.
I mean, everybody wants to be seen. I think if we all reflect on, well, if say in the dining out situation, we always gravitate to places where we walk in and there's this beautiful warm welcome and we feel like...
And they know you.
Yeah, like you... It,
yeah,
because
guest recognition is
that's
huge.
That's part of, you know, I think that's part of our DNA, isn't it? We want to be seen and we want that human connection, and that's the basis of every single aspect of life.
Yeah.
And so for our team, you know, it's really important to us they feel cared for, that we know them, that we know what they need, you know, what their aspirations are they growing and developing? And also, you know, we're trying to do things differently. And I think, you know, we're trying to sort of understand what people need and how for them to have a wonderful professional career, but also a life as well, and recognise that. I don't think historically, certainly not in our business at any rate, there was ever any recognition that you even had a personal life.
Yeah.
You would practically pretend you didn't.
Because it's a massive job, isn't it? It's
it would almost be frowned upon if you said, oh, well, actually, I've got a, you know, something personal to attend to. I need to go to a school event, or I need to do this. They'd be like, oh, well, does that mean you're not dedicated?
Yeah.
You know, and we're sort of really...
I think it is really... It's still there in our industry. And, you know, the luxury, I suppose, we have of having a larger business is that we're 7 days a week. And, you know, we've got a great lady who works for us, but she picks up her child from school every day. So she came to us and said, I can only work lunches, but I need to be gone by this time so I can pick up my child from school. Great. You know, so I think in some smaller businesses, it's really hard. And people, I know operators, they try to, you know, chefs generally would be in at 9 in the morning, smoke 3 cigarettes, 10 cups of coffee, and walk out at midnight, you know? And, and then you go out and try to have a relationship, try to, you know, have some sort of semblance. You sleep on your days off and then you're back into work. And that was like, oh, well, you know, that's a badge of honour. You're not creative, you're not productive, you have no social skills. So, you know, I think the luxury we have now of having a bigger business is we can really, a lot of our team work 4 days a week. So they can have that real downtime, or you can plan things. And it's nothing for someone to say, you know, I need a Saturday night off because I'm going to, you know, it's a wedding or... So it's like, great, because we can... And those things are really important. I think that's what gives you longevity in keeping your team.
Like, you know, our operations manager, like he, you know, wants to play sport every Wednesday morning. That's really important to him. It's, you know, his special time where he catches up with his friends and so forth. So I structure my week around supporting that. So, you know, we do meetings on different days and we work around that. And for someone of that seniority, normally you just have to be there because that's what's expected. But we can do that differently. That's okay, you know. And I think just all the way along, again, when you've got your more junior people, seeing that senior people are able to perform at the highest level but still make time for themselves. And, you know, prioritise health and well-being and, you know, all of that. You can then also aspire to working out how do you have a career but also not neglect all of those other parts of your life that actually make life whole.
Yeah, well, it's important, isn't it? Because I think sometimes, a lot of the time, people see their career as their identity or their meaning or whatever it is.
Yeah,
100%. And I think that is so much where, you know, you go to an event, a cocktail party, and someone says, oh, so, you know, what do you do? I'm like, really?
Yeah.
That's it? That's all you got?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because people do that, that, you know, how many times have you heard someone who say, oh, I'm going to do that when I retire, or, I do that one day a month because that's my passion. I'm like, if that's your passion, God, you know? I suppose we're really lucky because we do the things that we're very passionate about.
Mm.
And I think, you know, I would workaholic. I would just go in and work and work and work. And the Balinese, you know, it was so funny because they were just
held a mirror up to us. You can tell this, can't you? They held a mirror up to us.
Totally, like
this
their life is
deep reflection.
Is
every
the
time.
Village? No,
yeah,
it's but
yeah,
it,
yeah.
It's
mm.
yeah,
and
that's true.
And
yeah.
They loved their work.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not if it meant they're going to miss out on the ceremony.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, I talked to people in the...
Well, it was not negotiable. I mean,
negotiable.
They would never miss a ceremony.
Yeah.
We had to structure our business around making sure that everybody could go to their ceremonies.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, people... there were several local villages in the area, so typically, you know, one village at a time would be... They have their ceremonies at different times. But, I mean, I remember when we first moved there and it was a full moon and Ross was trying to change the menu and he was thinking, wow, this is not going well. And then you realise, you know what, when it's the full moon, things don't quite go to plan and everybody's got other commitments and they're staying up all night because they've got commitments. And so people's head are not
in the
game. And
I was getting so frustrated and I was like, you know, then you realise, hold on, you know, this, we are in a completely other...
Yeah, you've got to work with the rhythm.
You know?
Yeah.
Is it the rhythm.
Yeah.
I think that's a good word, isn't it? Because what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, these cultures, they're living in the now.
They
you
are.
You know, this is a ceremony for this, I'm doing this now.
Yes.
Whereas we often live out here. So if this person doesn't turn up, if this person has to go to a wedding, then what am I going to do? This is going to fail. And, you know, everyone has to be here. I've got to work 20 hours a day in order to make this work, to keep it going.
Yeah.
But they're just going,
what's
in front of me?
And
their priorities
and their
are completely different.
Their family, their culture, their village,
know?
Their household. It is far more important to them than their work.
Mm.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think we, in the West, we define ourselves in many respects by the job we do.
Yeah.
How much money we earn, what we can, you know, show people how successful we are.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of other communities we've lived in, you know, one of our bellboys, and he was a driver as well, he was actually head of the village.
Right.
So we would, you know, and that's just what he chose to do within the hotel.
Yeah.
But within his village, he has such a high standing. And it was just someone... put their hands and greeted him in a certain way, and I was like, oh, what does Chatra do? Oh, Chatra's head of his village. Oh, really? I didn't realise that. And we had one of our staff who was actually almost a high priest. And but you, that's because that's their whole life.
Yeah.
And then work is something they do.
Yeah.
But their life and their village and their culture is the priority. Absolutely.
It was super interesting. Every time we went to get on a plane to go somewhere, they would say, oh, you know, we hope you have a lovely time seeing your family. There was this assumption that every time we left Bali, we were returning to our family.
Right.
And after a while, I was like, gosh, I'm starting to feel a bit embarrassed that we're like, oh, well, we're going somewhere here or we're going somewhere there. And I was like, are we supposed to be getting a message or learning something from this? It was so interesting because I think... you know, certainly for myself, I grew up in a nuclear family, you know, two parents, me, that's it. Have a beautiful, loving relationship and we're very close, but we're not that family that speaks every single day. But all of the love and the, support is there. It's just a different mechanism, you know, we just sort of, have done it differently. And I think, you know, I'm sure the day that I turned 18, I moved out of home and I had my own place and I was forging my own identity and So I was so, so focused on all of this. And again, when you're having this, you know, group of people reflecting back to you, this, I guess, you know, everybody lives and works together and supports each other.
Yeah.
And I think having
and
gone
you
through
you don't move
experiences,
out of home until you get married and, you know,
yeah,
and
well,
then
and,
the community
yeah.
will build you a new house. And, you know, it's all that.
Right.
I, yeah,
it was sort
I
of interesting.
That.
And
yeah.
I we started making a lot more home trips, I have to
yeah.
say. And we
yeah.
it started to actually shift how we were.
But we also then started saying, well, why don't we bring our family to where we are so they can appreciate sort of, because I mean, I don't know, for my parents, it was very hard to explain what you do,
yeah.
because, but aren't you a chef? Yeah, but Mum, I manage hotels now, but how do you do that? I don't know, Mum, I just, it's just what I do now. And why are you moving to Montenegro? Well, we're going to open a new hotel there, but you don't know the language. I know, I've never been there, but we're going. And we have two cats and a dog that we're taking with us, you know, so.
Yeah. That is big.
So yeah, we
yeah.
would do the craziest things, but it's not that crazy, really.
No.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not that crazy. Because, and what, and you know, the only reason we believe it's crazy sometimes is because of the restrictions, of the structures
yeah.
that we live in.
Yeah.
Totally.
You know?
Sonny moved
and
to Dubrovnik, sight unseen.
Yeah.
I'd been there a couple of times, and I said, you're going to love it, darling. And we got there,
yeah.
and I'd only, my project meetings were all in the summer. And there's a beautiful market in the village, and and then we arrived in January. It was like -5.
Mm.
We brought our animals from Singapore, so they went from 35 degrees to, so they were freaking out. And there was no market. None of the restaurants are open because it's seasonal.
Yeah.
So we started discovering things, but
I think on the flip side, you know, so one of the things about this school is, you know, apart from, you know, raising sort of community-minded, you know, loving girls and young women, is also telling them, you know, you can be anything, you can do anything, you can change the world, you can, what do you want to be and what do you want to bring,
yeah.
like what part of you do you want to bring to
yeah.
be the best of version of what that is. And I think what was super exciting, I think one element of our culture that is beautiful and incredible is that that equality and that uplifting sort of spirit.
Mm.
And I think generationally too, that's even more so, you know, certainly when I was coming through the ranks, that wasn't always the way, you know. So probably like Ross, I was a bit of a workaholic because I had felt like I had to work 10 times as hard to get the same roles. And, you know, there was that. And I feel like that's really shifting now. And I feel, as I see sort of girls and young women now, they feel deeply equal.
Yeah.
They just feel that that's a not negotiable.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of would laugh if they heard some things that were even going on 2-3 decades ago.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and of course still things go on, you know.
Yeah.
But, so it was really lovely, for example, when we moved to Montenegro and, you know, one of the, I mean, there were lots of team members that were, I think, not being supported to their potentials. And, you know, one, there was sort of a lovely young woman who was working for us and, you know, living at home and part of the village. And I think sort of, let's say, going through the motions of
sure.
the expectations of what her life was. And she was a really talented young woman, and she was working sort of alongside me, and I was getting her involved in a lot of things. And I guess, I don't know, a little bit of girl power was going on, I suppose. To the
I mean,
point
it was very rare for them.
Yeah.
We were, we'd taken over a government-run hotel. It was an island, and we were building a resort there.
Right.
And Queen Maria's summer residence was part of the development, and that was the first part we did. But it was a very male-dominated culture.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think when we arrived, first of all, we were from Australia, so, you know, I think that part of the world, they have quite an understanding of Australia, let's say.
Right.
But to have a woman as the sort of...
As the general manager.
As the general manager, that was quite extraordinary for...
Yeah.
A lot of
for
a
that,
lot of people
in
the village
moment,
for that
time,
for that moment
yeah.
in time,
that
was almost 20 years ago. But
but you know,
but
I think
yeah,
our
Marina,
present sort
yeah.
of, I think, going, everybody can do anything. Like let the basically
it,
let's
it.
Get let's get the most out of every single person, no
yeah.
matter what their role is, no matter who they are.
Yeah.
You know, nothing is going to prioritize you other than your passion and your willingness and your
yeah.
openness to learn and being part, you know, what are the beautiful threads we can find in everybody?
Yeah,
great. Whether they're a young woman, whether they're a, you know, a 70-year-old man that still wants to work and isn't being put out to pasture because he's
yeah.
an incredible professional and he was being sidelined. And like, you know what, you're incredible. You served Sophia Loren, you know, like you're James Bond of the hospitality world, you know, like... Have that as a badge of honour.
Yeah.
You're not a has-been. You're an amazing person with decades of experience.
Yeah.
So anyway, this young woman, she went back to... She went to university. She applied to university, got a role there, ended up going into marketing, becoming a marketing director. She is now a general manager of a high-end resort in Montenegro.
That's fantastic.
And she was, you know, an entry-level secretary with no... no tertiary education when we moved there, and now she, you know, I mean, like, it sort of this shift of also I think being around people that said, you know, you can be anything.
Exactly.
Like, what is it that you want, you know, and not to put a value system on whatever that is. Anybody can choose to do what they want, but if their aspirations are something, how do you support that?
Remember, there's a particular noodle that these ladies were making that I found fascinating, and so I said I need to work out because I wanted to put it on the menu, and they go, so I was asking the male chefs. I said, you know, I want to make this noodle. They said, oh no, the women do that, and I'm like, yeah, but I want to learn how to do it. They could not wrap their heads around the fact that, and then when I wanted to put it on the menu, and so I made. Fun of it.
Yeah.
I said, and one of the other chefs I had there, who was English, I said, okay, we're going to go and learn how to make these noodles. And the women were laughing that these, you know, us are all, you know, I got hands like a bunch of bananas and, you know, we're trying to make this really delicate noodle.
Yeah.
But, and then I said, okay, we're going to put on the menu and the chefs are going to have to make it. And, it was a big talk in the village that, and it was, but it was, it actually made them realize that how culturally that had always been women's work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I brought those women into the kitchen and made that
a
priority.
Yeah.
And
they were ultimately thrilled, weren't they? But it was a bit of a journey.
Oh, it was a journey.
Yeah.
Because also the male chefs were going like, this is our domain, why are these women in here?
Yeah.
And then we say, okay, come on, you know, Blaho, come on, you have a go.
Yeah.
And then it was just everyone's laughing and they realised like, this is so...
It ultimately became a huge icebreaker eventually.
Yeah,
but wow,
yeah.
what a tense moment that... I mean, it sounds ridiculous because it's making...
No, it doesn't at all.
It's making like a pasta noodle, right?
Yeah.
So you think, why is this... But to speak to what Ross is saying, like this was this cultural tension of whose domain is this? And women only do this and men only do this and, you know, vice versa.
That's right. There's so much more to it than just making the noodle, isn't it?
100%.
There's all that
yeah.
certain beliefs and values and all that stuff. Which
it, but it gave it gave the resorts authenticity in terms of we weren't just producing, you know, Italian food because we look across the water, the Adriatic to Italy, but it was actually taking... the local food and making that the hero and then also, you know, to do that we would get nonnas in the kitchen actually teaching everyone how to do it and then so they you know, they have a place within the resort where they didn't before. So you sort of brought this there was an opportunity
and they were also
to do it differently,
I think. Just for example, you know, that we touched on earlier on with the Balinese, they were thrilled. They were like, oh, is this special to you? Because this is just what we do every day. And we're like, this is why people want to come to your country to experience all of these beautiful...
Yeah.
So, yes, the beautiful ocean, or yes, the beautiful this, or the beautiful, you know, 15th century villages. But, like, these are all the things... The, you know, the fabric of your life, that's actually what people want to connect with. to go, wow, now we're understanding and having some insight about some of the things that are important to you.
Yeah.
That's actually what it's about. Again,
yeah.
Drawing back to the human connection.
That's right.
Not just sort of, you know.
That's right. And we all have those things, don't we? We all have those things
all,
which are familiar to us.
Yeah.
Which, but other people, you know, it's a new experience or quite unique.
Yeah.
Just to finish off, this has been a fantastic conversation. And I know you, both of you said, you know, you've learned so much and from your travels and so on, but you are both, you know, just from what I've heard today, I think great role models for people, great role models for the people you're looking after now and in your travels overseas and the things that you've set up. And, yeah, I think just, I guess the way that things, you've told people things, as you said before, Sunny, you said you can do anything, but you sort of have to model that as well, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
You have to present that in some way within yourself.
Yeah.
It's no point just the words being there.
No, and that's a journey, right? And I mean, all of us, I don't know about you, but every single week, you know, probably every day even, I think, wow, I wish I could have handled that differently.
Oh,
I wish
definitely.
I could every make that
one.
Decision or, you know, like, or, I mean, I think we all need to be in constant reflection about how that is, and are we modelling the right, you know, that on that day, or who do we want to be? I think we need to be brave enough to be human and fall over and to say, wow, I didn't handle that one well, but I'm really proud of this. And, you know, and
but
I
also think
just
a lot of people, they really
journey.
Put limits on themselves, and culturally or environment, you know, puts limits on people.
Yeah.
And I, you know, God, I don't know. I just think, why not give it a go?
But I think if we can bring humanity into anything, I mean, you know, recently, you know, a huge goal for us has been to travel with Bronte as much as possible to, particularly we want to show her some of the regional areas in throughout Asia. We went to India recently. We got back a few weeks ago from that. And I think being able to see different communities around the world, understand that people have beliefs, different value systems, different food, you know, architecture, ways of living, cultural sensitivities.
Yeah.
When you're in a country, even if you don't subscribe to what that is, to be respectful within that and to know that people can have different points of view and that's okay.
Mm.
All of those different things, I think, you know, we have felt this deep need to expose her and join her in on that, I think, because that's part of our worldview and being part of our journey. And I think the more, whether locally or via traveling, we can see different other communities, you know, see different communities and see their points of view and speak to people and just understand that everybody has a different way.
Yeah.
I think that's going to breed tolerance and collaboration and community. I think this is super important.
Yeah, just to engage with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
just
you can
on every level.
You can live in the bubble quite easily.
It's very easy.
And so just for her to have these, I mean, her room is—it's crazy. She's got her Indian stuff. She's got her stuff from France, and then, you know, all the Balinese. And so she and you can just see she sits there and she remembers and.
Mm.
You know, she collects books wherever we go. So she's got a Bali books and an Indian
books.
But,
you know, we were walking down the street, you know, I don't know, about 10 days ago, and there was a lady in a sari, and Bronte said, oh, namaste. And, my goodness, the eyes in this woman lit up like a candle. It was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And, it doesn't take a lot, does it?
No, we took a bunch of year threes down to a place called Beehive yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a community centre for elderly people.
Mm.
And very, as we're talking about, multicultural.
Yeah.
And we took them down there to sing and just see what they do down there.
Mm.
And one of the girls in year three went up to this woman who was Chinese and started speaking to her in Chinese.
Yeah, yeah.
And this woman started tearing up.
Oh, beautiful.
Because, you know, she could hardly speak any English and she was taking selfies with her.
Oh, I love it.
That's
great. So beautiful.
Just having that connection.
Yeah, it is.
Look, can I just say thank you again for this conversation?
Pleasure.
It's been wonderful. At the beginning, before we started recording, I think you said, Ross, you know, we know that you work in hotels and restaurants and things like that, but you wanted to talk about this whole community thing, and it's wonderful, it is. I mean, you've talked a little bit about what you do, but not just what you do, as we've talked about, just your jobs or your places of work, but what's really in your heart and your philosophy around that. And it's so obvious for me, seeing this room with both of you, so it's a real gift, so thank you.
We've definitely had a journey.
No, it's a great journey. It's a great journey.
It's
so
a lot
really
of fun.
Appreciate it. And thanks everyone for listening. And if you've got questions for Ross or Sunny about anything that they do or want to get involved in some of the things they do, come by me. I'm sure I can pass them. Thanks again, and hope you're all doing well. Look forward to seeing you around.